It is a bitch to build wealth, and it is a bitch to play the game in America. Hi, everyone. I'm Sid Charisse.
And I'm David Bosher.
And you're listening to Destroy the Hairdresser,
where we teach you to salon differently.
After years of searching, we finally found a software that does it all. Introducing Aura Salonware. With Aura, you have the simple tools to streamline your business, such as a card on file, settings for hourly pricing, and even station sharing options. Implement communication boundaries with clients by interacting directly through Aura. Finally, a software that takes your business as seriously as you do. If you're interested in this type of profit maximization, visit aurasalonware.com/DTH to receive special discounts and promos.
As a hairdresser, I know the struggle of managing your back bar, and that's where our friends at SalonSkill come to play. While you weigh your products with their app, SalonSkill automatically tracks your products used, making inventory management a breeze. Not to mention they also save your formula. They are a digital solution for back bar management, and they really make it easy. You know we're both big on knowing your numbers, and SalonSkill does just that. Visit salonskill.com/DTH and use the code DTH10 at checkout for 10% off your first year. This finger means I have something to say. And
you and Silky Nutmeg Ganache.
Okay.
only the
you know
real
it
ones
grinds
will get
my
that.
Gear. Okay, something that I know that I am trying to make it my life goal is to really get people to understand wealth in a big picture way.
I gave up. I'm not helping anyone get this anymore.
I got you.
What if I just quit right now? What if I got up right now and said, I quit?
I'd be like, sit your ass down. Okay. No, you don't.
I'm so tired of trying to help people understand how to make money.
It's exhausting.
And then they want to argue how not to make money.
Okay, well, we just talked about this in the past episode, and it's one, because of lack of risk-taking and also lack of capacity. As I get older, I have more empathy.
I'm having a very different experience.
That's why I looked at you. I have more empathy because I'm almost looking, it's not triggering me anymore. And I think before I would get frustrated
that
because I would see their... I would see their potential and they couldn't. So it would frustrate me as a coach because I'm like, I want to shake the fear out of them. And then they would overcome it and be like, oh, I should have listened to you from the beginning. I'm like, yeah, you should have. Now, as I've gotten older in my coaching, I've been teaching and educating and coaching for, oh my God, over a decade. And I now have a lot more empathy because now I'm seeing how small their vessel is and what they're missing. And so now I'm trying to create solutions as a coach to come around different paths and avenues to see it. And sometimes it's also just means...
Like, gotcha. You're
gotcha.
Wealthy now.
And sometimes it means setting a boundary and being like, I can't coach you anymore because you're not willing to get uncomfortable and do the thing. So this is a waste of my time and energy, which was a hard thing to do because we come from a hairdresser mindset of we have to take every client and we can't get rid of them. We have to please everyone. And going into coaching and being a coach... I also realize that we can do the same thing as set a boundary of saying, if you are not willing to do the work, I am not willing to coach you anymore.
You can set that boundary with anyone in your life.
Yeah.
I just had a call with a student last week. And I said, if you don't increase your price to this number.
Which, for context, you had been talking to them about this and they were not doing it over and over and over again. It had been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For context, I'm allowed to talk to my student that way.
Yeah.
So you don't have to know the context. Context. Oh my God. Contents. Context. Content.
Contacts.
Contacts. 1-800. But yeah, for context, I am really tough with my students, but we also have
they're
a
also
big
very big and high achievers.
So I said, if you don't raise your price point to this by our next phone call, don't schedule your next phone call because we're not coaching together anymore. Because in my head, why the hell are you paying me so much money
to not take my advice?
Yeah. And like, in the end, this person did it and
it was incredible.
And it's great, of course. And it's a risk because the risk is it's not the moment you do it, it's the responsibility you take afterward. And that is hard, but that's, I think people, when they get into coaching, they do the things like, well, I did this. And it's like, no, but now we take responsibility for it.
Yeah.
Especially, we don't allow this at all in our program, but when people go, well, you told me to do this and I did and it didn't, whatever. That doesn't work for me.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, did you follow through? You can't just do the thing out of pride and...
You can't do anything that yeah. way.
Are you continuing to manage the responsibility of the risk that
are you taking responsibility for what you're doing? Because if you can't take responsibility for it, I don't recommend doing it. So
that's a whole different conversation.
That's a different conversation. But
like,
if
your student said, I cannot take responsibility for that, like, that would be a whole different coaching.
And I might be able to say, and I can't take responsibility for you anymore yeah. for this conversation. I think they get kind of jarring, but it's like, why else did you pay me?
Mm-hmm.
To just keep giving me money, but you don't make any more?
Well, a lot of people think that's how it should be. Like, I'm paying you. No,
If I'm not making my students wealthier, how are they going to keep paying me?
Exactly.
I can't make them poorer.
Yeah. I mean, you will if they don't listen to you.
Exactly. So it's like, we're very tough on our students. We demand a level of excellence and performance. And we're not for everyone. If you're not ready for that, it's
okay.
It's
yeah.
okay. But we're not one of those programs that you just come
pay
in
us and maybe don't show up.
Yeah, no, we're not.
We're going to hold you to showing up.
I think we have a rule in our contract that if you don't show up for like two months or something,
yeah.
we just cancel the program.
We just cancel you.
We could be assholes and just keep charging.
Yeah.
But
I don't
it doesn't
want that.
Feel right.
Mm-mm.
And I'm taking responsibility.
We also don't hold people to, like, if someone wants to quit, we're like, bye.
Yeah, go.
And
our doors open.
We cancel it immediately
ready.
And you can come back when you want. Like, I think there's some reassurance in that. Like, there's freedom in, like, when you want to leave, you leave. And then there's freedom if you want to come back, you want to come back. Like, the reality of, and this is the same thing as a non-compete, like, the reality of holding someone to paying me money when I'm not coaching them anymore for the sake of it doesn't make sense to me.
The energy just
I'm like, get out of here. If you don't want to be here, go. Like, that's okay.
But it is always shocking to me how many people want to argue about why they should make less money.
Fully convinced.
They'll die on it. They'll die on that sword.
I've literally said that. I'm like, is this a hill you want to die on? Like, you look at me in the eye and tell me you do not want to make more money.
I told the doorman that the other day when he got mad that my dogs peed on the sidewalk by the flowers. He said, please don't let your dogs pee on these flowers. And I said, is that really a hill that you want to die on today?
Ironically, I have the same... So in Chicago,
because
there's no...
I just want to point out, all the dogs are peeing
on that flower bed.
On that flower bed. That's
whether they live in that building or not.
Most likely why my dogs peed on it. But it's like, that's not how it works outside on the streets of Manhattan.
I've been yelled at for the same damn thing.
No.
I'm like, there's no... This is such a sidebar conversation, but where I live in downtown Chicago, I live in literally like the Times Square of Chicago, and the only grass around me is the major park, and they forbid dogs being in it. So sometimes we sneak them in. But so our dogs have gone accustomed to going on sewer drains. Like, that is their grass.
Because they're polite.
They're city dogs. And I remember that there was a sewer too close to a business, and it wasn't even the owner of the business. They were like, your dog can't pee there. I'm like, I guarantee
you. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Was it a woman?
No.
Oh, it's always women for me.
Really? No. It's always a man for me.
Weird.
Mm-hmm.
Women like to tell me what to do with my dogs.
I mean, I am a woman, so men like to tell me what to do. Anyways, speaking of that.
And then I'm like, am I not gay enough to be your best friend? So you're gonna... That's a whole other conversation.
That was a whole other episode. You know, something that's really important... that's what I was saying in the beginning of this episode. I am going to fight for this until I die. This is a hill I'm willing to die on, is getting hairdressers and really anybody to understand the big picture of wealth on paper.
It sounded like you said the bitch picture.
I did.
The bitch picture of wealth.
Subconsciously, I probably did. It is a bitch to build wealth. And it is a bitch to play the game in America. But that's what we have to start thinking about, is the big picture of wealth on paper. And I don't know why our industry is so anti-building wealth on paper. The government does not care if you made $70,000 in tips. The government wants to see what you made on paper. You will not be able to buy a house. You will not be able to get a business loan. You will not be able to grow your life in the way that you want to if we do not start making wealth on paper.
Not the government, the banks.
The banks, yeah.
The government cares a lot.
That's true.
If you are not making claiming 70. Tips. But yeah, you can't go buy a house when you are trying, when you and your accountant are trying to make it look you don't make any money.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult. And we
if I have an accountant that suggests, there are loopholes sometimes, yes, but they are still legal loopholes. But yeah. If I have an accountant that's like, let's not, and I'm like, your sketch, I do not want to be a part. We had an accountant like that. And I was like,
it did not work out.
It did not work out for anybody. And we had
in all fairness, he was like that and we didn't know it.
Yeah. We were also really young and didn't know.
It was our first business accountant.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of accountants out there, they think they're helping. First of all, the problem is they look at hairdressers like, oh, they're just hair. They're just a hairdresser. Mm-hmm. They're just a salon owner.
There's like, already a stigma.
It's not a real business. Like, they don't make lots of money. And I think that's a problem.
Our students have shocked accountants with the amount of money they're making. Our accountant gets shocked by our students that they work with.
We have had more accountants tell our students, I've never seen a salon make this type of profit. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know it was possible. And it's just always funny. They're like, we get referrals from accountants. Like,
yeah.
People will tell, accountants will tell other hairdresser clients about us, which I think is cool because they're like, this is, you know. And now what's cool is when an accountant goes, oh, you're going to carry retail?
Yeah.
You haven't heard?
Yeah. You should go listen to Distro the Hairdresser.
Oh, you have a front desk? That's not a good idea.
That's a bad business.
And now a word from our sponsors.
We have partnered with Hair Story, a product line that is good for our clients, our planet, and our bank account. Have you heard of Nuwash? It's like a shampoo, but actually good for your hair. Nuwash is a cleansing cream that cleans and conditions without the harsh foams and damaging detergents found in traditional shampoos. Hair Story does things differently, creating more conscious options that respect the environment and your hair ecosystem. Ready to try Nuwash for free? Visit hairstory.com/DTH to get pro access today.
Living in America is a Monopoly game.
It really is.
And if you don't,
I personally love a game.
I do too. If you don't know how to play the game, it's overwhelming and we shut down and we throw our hands up and we go,
and we're in the jail.
If we're in jail, we don't pass go.
Mm-hmm.
And we go, you know what? Forget it. And so then we start cheating and playing our own version.
Mm-hmm.
Or we just don't take it seriously. And then you have a whole group of people that don't take the game seriously. They don't take themselves seriously. Then the conspiracy of everyone's out to get my money, which is kind of funny because you're not even trying to make any.
Yeah.
So if you're going to live in America or any country where capitalism is, you know, the governing consciousness of the people, you have to learn how to play the game and you should start to enjoy it because until you do, until you learn the rules and until you start to enjoy the process, you're going to get really frustrated and feel like everyone's out to get you when really you just aren't good at playing the game.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, once you get good at playing the game, all of a sudden you're not so mad anymore. You're not so frustrated at, you know, small things that really aren't affecting you. You start to really take responsibility because you know what you're doing. You know how to play.
And the result is the people that have built true wealth, they start to use their money more proactively where they're investing in buildings or businesses that are providing jobs for people, like good jobs, which is helping the community, then they're making more money. And if they're not a dickwad and, you know, they're actually really good at that, they're also looking at how they can invest their money into truly making change in the community, which is charity on a whole different level. And then it's less about being affordable and more about being charitable. And that's the big thing too. It's like our industry tries to constantly shrink themselves and their lack of growth, and that's hurting everyone.
It drives me.
We've talked about it
insane.
So much because you can do more as an impactful business owner for providing jobs, providing opportunities. Then you're making more money that you have more time to give your time to places that need you. And then it creates a whole different wealthy experience. And, you know, we talk about wealth too. Like, not only does your wealth have to reflect on paper, but it also has to reflect in your what you're able to save and what you're able to invest and how many avenues of revenue you have. And if you are not, and we talk about this all the time, I'm a six-figure hairdresser. I'm like, how much is in your savings account? $1,000? Okay, no, you're $1,000 hairdresser.
Yeah.
Because you spent all your money.
Or a four-figure.
Don't try to think after we've been recording podcasts all day long.
But it's true. It, you know, everyone does this thing. I'm very anti-licensing and everyone knows that and hates that about me.
We've talked about it. We have a whole episode on Go Back and Listen.
Which, by the way, did not cause any problems.
No, people actually, because what we were talking about, what it...
But then my post did. Well, anyways,
yeah.
I'm very anti-licensing. I think it should be deregulated. And my point with that was...
That it's just money in a business. Licensing is a business.
Yes. When people are trying to build wealth in a business, they think that that means how much I can work.
Mm-hmm.
I work and I put money away. Savings is one thing.
It's not bad to have a savings account.
Not bad. But it's, I think
it's
we've
not
been,
the end all be all.
I think we've been taught by all like the boomer gurus.
Oh, my mom definitely did that. Like, save your money. Do you have a savings? Cushions, having cushions, absolutely.
Yeah.
But
that seemed to be the only goal.
Yeah, there was no talks about investing that money. How can that money be making me money?
No, it's not saving. There's a difference between savings and hoarding.
Hoarding. And I was taught to hoard my money.
You know, I think it's a baby boomer thing because they came, their parents
for sure
were in the Great Depression. You know, you come out of that and you're taught to save. And they live in a time where the economy was really good and savings was easy.
That was, for that generation, that was the only, that was building wealth.
But we don't live in a world
like that anymore.
That supports saving.
Mm-hmm.
You open Instagram, you're being sold. You go outside, you're being sold to. You turn on the TV, you're being sold. Like,
or constant, you have to invest in your business, spend the money to make money. You have to, you know, all of that.
But, you know, so saving money is good, but that's not the final part of the equation. What are you investing in? Risk taking.
Yeah.
You're going to have to try to invest in property if you want to be wealthy. You have to. It's not an option.
Mm-hmm.
And even better is if you want to open a salon, buy the building. Now you're investing in property and running a business that you know how to run.
Invest in other people.
Yeah.
Invest in other businesses. Your money should be making you money constantly.
Did you grow up with like the Dave Ramsey and the...
Grow
up with, but...
Yeah, I know who
Dave
he is
Ramsey
and
then the woman... I can't think of her name, but their big battle cry as baby boomers is stop drinking coffee.
Mm-hmm.
If you stop drinking coffee, you'd be a millionaire.
Yeah.
Which is not true.
It's not true.
I understand the concept.
For sure.
But I think people get into this, they get stuck with like, I can't tell you how many hairdressers I know that have like $50,000 to $100,000 in their savings account. Which is so impressive, but that's it. They don't know what to do from there.
Yeah.
So they did the part that they were told to do, and then they kind of, that's just...
Freeze, yeah.
They freeze. And they naturally spend the rest because they're like, but I did the thing. I have the... It's like, well, we can do so much.
Yeah.
We can do so much more.
We've had a couple coaches where Joy LeMay actually taught this great class that we have called 100 Save Your Way to 101K, because that was something, and she shares how she got out of debt, saved that massive amount of money, and then used that money to open her salon, which is now funding an incredible amount for her business, her life, her family, and then how she was able to also start to rebuild that savings again, which right. is going to result in probably another salon or another business or something like that, you know, which is incredible.
I think we save for uncertainty, but we're also waiting for uncertainty. Like, if you're going to save and then you stop, something is going to happen that requires that money.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be waiting for something to happen. You need to go make something happen.
Yeah.
That's the risk-taking part that we always talk about that I think that's why I'm saying you kind of have to upset people, especially if you grow up with parents like mine, where it's like, you need to say, that's irresponsible. Everything I do to my family is irresponsible, yet it's working. So
then they're all like, oh my God, I'm so proud of you.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just it's irresponsible to them because they don't have the capacity to ever do that. And it is scary.
Well, the rules of the game changed.
They absolutely changed.
Like, I do think with all, we have seven generations on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
They all are giving their version of the Matrix to each other. Like, yeah. You know, well, the Great Depression and then, well, after World War II yeah. and the crash in 2008. Oh my
Even
God.
Us as millennials,
people
were
love
like,
talking about the crash of 2008.
We talk about that. And the Gen Z's like, we don't fucking remember.
Yeah, Gen Z's like, the coronavirus
yeah.
of 2020. Like, it doesn't matter what generation you're in. Like, we're all experiencing chaos. We're all experiencing uncertainty.
We've all created toxicity and we've also all created really awesome things. Like,
but what that always stays the same, but what changes are how you play the game.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, a lot of millennials are playing the game like baby boomers or Gen X because that's who taught them.
Yeah.
And they're trying to make them proud.
Gen Z's actually been the first generation that's actually said,
forget it. They're like,
we're
going to
do it our way. Yeah. And that's really inspiring because yeah. it's like,
millennials are trying to live like boomers in an era that does not work.
Yeah.
You are not going to stay at the same job for 50 years. You are not going to retire with a pension.
Yeah.
You are not going to make enough money with just one job.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably not going to be able to buy your first home until you're older.
Yeah.
These are just different rules. There's nothing wrong with them. But you do have to learn how to play
them. Have kids later. Families later.
Which is, I think is better.
Ugh, loving that life.
Boomers are like, you got to save. It's like, is that because you had me at 18?
Yeah. I'd be saving too.
Is it because you didn't have any money?
Well, so that's another talking about investment properties, like having my wife and I talk about it all the time. We've invested in two homes right now. We have renters in them and we definitely want to do a third, maybe even a fourth. And we've talked about it, like we're like those houses are our child's savings for our child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They can either sell the house for college money, they can have the house on their own, they can be responsible, like whatever that looks like. And that's what we have to think. Like, whenever we've had situations where I'm like, I really want to do this, but we don't have money for it. And like, she reminds me, she's like, we can always sell a house. And that was the point of having that investment is like, that is
or
our
rent
savings.
You rent them out.
Or rent them out. Yeah. That
you
is
rent
our,
one of them out, right?
Mm-hmm. And well, technically, both of them, just one of the renters is my mom.
Oh, right, right. Yeah.
So
Sid makes her mom pay her rent.
Yep.
She's a lovely daughter.
Whatever.
Sid's playing the game. I don't know what you guys are doing. She really did a whole flip.
You're going to pay me money to live in my house now.
I'm the captain now.
And so that is exactly like what we're talking about, though, is like having that now in our savings account. Our savings account doesn't become our security or our cushion. It becomes our new opportunities to invest
right.
or spend money on things that we work hard for, like a vacation or...
I think that's hard for millennials.
It really is.
Again, because
we give Gen X and... I mean, we love all of our generations because I've learned something from every single one, but we also like to rag on our own generation. You and I are both millennials and they have fucked shit up too. Like...
Yeah. You know, I have guilt from being raised by boomers that, like, you shouldn't go on vacation.
Yeah.
You should be working.
There was a lot of restriction.
Suppression? Or was it suppression? Yeah. Like, it didn't feel fulfilling.
Not restriction, yeah.
I remember going to the movie theater and, like, we all shared one popcorn because why would you all have your own popcorn?
Exactly.
And of course, now as a millennial, I'm like, we all get our own popcorn and it's ultra-sized.
And get your dirty ass hands out of my...
Exactly. And I want it to be this big. I'm only going to eat this much. But because of my childhood, I would like to order this one.
It's true.
We're dealing with that. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but it's a side effect. And I think that when you learn how to play the game in the generation that you are, it's why we have problems in politics. You have young kids that have ideas, but you have... older people.
Ancient.
Yes.
Politicians that are like, no.
Yeah.
Your ideas.
Yeah. And they're like, well, I know better because I was around when Reagan was president. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I don't know if that was better. So long story short, I tell this to people all the time. This episode's going long because we are passionate about it. But I tell people all the time, if you're getting into the industry and you think you're just going to open a salon and like, that's it.
Mm-mm.
If you want to be a wealthy person, your salon needs to generate money so you can invest in other things such as property or open another location so you have another avenue of revenue. Like, you can't just be...
If you want to truly retire and still have businesses that are making wealth for the generations behind you.
Right.
That's generational
wealth.
I think people
think like...
starting to get it to...
Like, oh, I'll be a hairdresser and I open a salon and that's it. It's like, no, that's just the foundation.
That's the baseline, yeah.
And that's what we're trying to help saloners and hairdressers understand is that what you think is the finish line is just the beginning of building your wealth. And that's why we're so pro opening salons and commission salons and not doing rental. And like,
the game is set up for it.
Yeah. We're setting you up at the start, even though in your mind you may feel like that is the end. It's kind of a mind fuck, if you will.
Absolutely.
But that's it. That's all I got. The math ain't mathin'. Yeah, learn how to play the game. 1-800-DTH-HELP.
Next time on Destroy the Hairdresser, the podcast.
Seniority is not a thing in 2023. It doesn't Mm-mm. make any sense. You don't make more money just because you've been somewhere longer.
When there's other stylists below you that are putting in more effort.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
More desire. Maybe you're better hairdressers.